I'm Dr. Jackie Blissett. I'm from the School of Psychology at the University of Birmingham, and I'm talking about the psychology of eating in the early years. The early years are exceptionally important in determining children's later weight, their weight concerns, their eating attitudes, and their eating behaviour. If you want to have a good understanding of the complexity of the issues of tackling obesity, you can look at the foresight map, which was commissioned by the Government Office for Science in 2007. This illustrates the interaction of social psychology, individual psychology, physical activity, physiology, food consumption and production. Although this looks like a horrendously complex interactive map, and indeed it is, changing small elements of this complex map can have significant repercussions for energy balance in children. So this presentation looks at developmental perspectives on children's weight, BMI, weight concerns and dieting behaviour in terms of media, family and peer influences. Childhood obesity is a significant problem. We know that 16% of children between 2 and 10 were classified as obese in England in 2005. We also know that a significant number of adults are also obese. This should be no surprise to us. Genetic and environmental risk tends to cluster within families. And if we look at the statistics for overweight in children, we can see that statistically speaking, children who have both parents overweight or obese are significantly more likely to be overweight and obese themselves compared to children with no obese or overweight parents, or indeed children with one overweight or obese parent. There's a significant gene environment interaction here, and as a result, most of our interventions focus on modification of the environmental factors associated with obesity, such as food preferences, eating habits for obesity, other obesity predictive behaviours such as physical activity. Parents influence their children's eating in many ways, right from time spent in the uterus. Infants are exposed to different flavours within the amniotic fluid, and during breastfeeding, different flavours come through breast milk, which can promote a wider range of accepted foods and more positive response to novel foods during weaning. When parents wean their children, children tend to like food that they have been exposed to, so weaning really matters in terms of setting up children's food preferences in later life. Unfortunately, children also like food that's high in fat and sugar, so there's an innate response. So if you wean children on what you might perceive as the wrong type of food, you have effectively a double whammy here, where you have children being weaned onto foods and encouraged to prefer foods that are not necessarily particularly healthy for them. Parents also need to provide and consume appropriate foods themselves. So children can't select their own foods when they're in the infants and toddlers years. All they have available to them is what parents provide for them, and this needs to be appropriate. Parents also need to model appropriate eating behaviour themselves, and parents often aren't models of healthy eating behaviour. Parents also use a variety of feeding practices to encourage their children to do what they want them to do, which is essentially to eat healthily. But unfortunately, a lot of these backfire. So parents use what we call the clear up your plate phenomenon, which is to focus children on finishing off their plate, often for some kind of reward. All this does is to focus children's attention on the extrinsic versus the intrinsic cues for eating. So what we want children to be able to do is listen to their internal signals of hunger and satiety. By encouraging children to clear up their plate, we're encouraging them to look for external signals to stop eating. We also tend as parents to use foods as a reward and to reward our children for eating foods that they don't want to eat. Unfortunately, what this does is it increases preference for the foods that we use as a reward and reduces preference for the task foods. And I don't have to tell you that, of course, we tend to use foods that they already like as a reward food and foods that they don't like, such as vegetables, as a task food. So we're exaggerating the behavioural responses that children already have by using these strategies. We also tend to restrict children's preferred foods, and this increases their preference for those foods and makes them more likely to want to have them. And restriction also seems to exacerbate weight increases in children who are in what we call high-risk groups, so children who have an obese parent. Parents who use food for emotion regulation are also more likely to set up their children for greater emotional eating later in childhood. There's also significant parental influence on children's dieting behaviour. Parental advice to lose weight is a significant predictor of children's initiation of unhealthy dieting practices, and most children hear about dieting from a family member. The importance of thinness to fathers is a surprisingly important predictor of children's constant dieting, and seems to be more important than mothers' attitudes in some studies. Direct comments made by the parents about weight concerns or body esteem or weight loss behaviours are also very important predictors. For these reasons, parents have been termed the key players in the prevention and treatment of weight problems. And it has implications for obesity, dieting behaviour, and even eating psychopathology. So parents influence their children's dietary practices, both in terms of eating behaviour and in terms of actual restrictive dieting. They influence their physical activity, their sedentary habits, and their body satisfaction via a whole range of feeding and eating practices, food socialisation, and parenting style. Peer influences are also important. Peer influences on children's eating choices in nursery settings are common, so children who eat with other children with different food preferences will often want to try that food when they wouldn't have previously wanted to. Unfortunately, there are also peer influences for overweight children that are less positive, so overweight children report higher levels of peer victimisation and teasing than non-overweight children, for example. Peer influences also seem to be important in terms of physical activity. Overweight children in particular report greater physical activity when in the presence of peers than lean children do. So this is a potential source of intervention which may boost both physical activity and address some of the social isolation experienced by overweight children. Finally, media influences. Media concerns abound about how much television children watch and what the effects are on children in terms of obesity. It is true that exposure to screen time is related to obesity, but this relationship is relatively weak. That doesn't mean it's not important. Watching television obviously is a sedentary behaviour. Children are also exposed to food advertising while they watch, and they also eat whilst they're viewing television. They tend to graze on less healthy foods, and they tend to eat more than they would normally do. They're also exposed to ideal body images, which we know promotes body dissatisfaction in children. And children who make an effort to look like a media figure are twice as likely to become very concerned with their weight in later life. When children are exposed to food advertising, although guidelines and restrictions have come in which reduces the amount of food advertising to children, it hasn't completely disappeared. And when they are exposed to this food advertising, we know that they're exposed generally to adverts for sugared cereals, high fat, sugar and processed food and drink and fast food retailers. And we know that these food adverts do exactly what they're intended to do. They increase pester power, they affect children's food preferences, and they increase children's overall food intake of all foods except low-fat savoury snacks. Unfortunately, the effects seem to be enhanced for overweight children. So what is the solution? What is a healthy balance in this arena? The parent and the family, I think, is a fundamental source of a potential solution that can start to address some of the issues in obesity. Parents have to model appropriate eating behaviour and attitudes. They should promote an authoritative feeding style. That is, there should be a division of responsibility in feeding. The parent decides what's available and what goes on the plate. The child then decides what and how much of that to eat. And by doing this, we promote the development of self-control in children. The media may also be useful in terms of promoting healthy balance in food advertising and modelling appropriate food choices. Peers may also be useful in terms of promoting positive collective eating and trying new foods and promoting physical activity. So the key learning points of this lecture were that parent and family factors are critical determinants of healthy eating and attitudes. The media's role is important but likely to be secondary to that of the family. Peers are implicated in the promotion of physical activity and may help to determine children's self-esteem and support. And interventions are often successful if they target the family environment as a whole.